Glad to see all of you. I hope my tie is straight.
Where's that knot?
The men know that some ties are slicker than others and they don't stay in place as well. Glad to see you all here. Glad to have all of you who are online with us this morning. Let me get all my papers squared away. We're studying Daniel. I hope it's been of interest to you so far. I don't think anybody enjoys a class any more than the teacher. Anybody need a worksheet? John is ready with worksheets and quizzes. I assume that second sheet he's got is a quiz. We'll start with our quiz this morning and then do a little reading. And in the meantime, you can be checking out that cool map. I drew that last night with my crayons. It's a great time to live in that you can create such a thing as a PowerPoint and find all kinds of neat stuff online that's just free. You just copy it and put it on there, and then you use it for teaching purposes. That's where I got this. Don't know who made it, but thank you. Probably not watching right now, but maybe later. All right, let's do our quiz. Happy Mother's Day, by the way. Thank you. It's a great day. Nebuchadnezzar asked his wise men to tell him two things in chapter 2. What were those two things? What was the first one? What his dream was. And also what it meant, the interpretation. And of course, the wise men that he had gathered said, if you'll tell us the dream, we'll make up something. Well, they didn't say that, but that's what they would have been doing. But they didn't even get that much. So if the wise men cannot do this, they will all be killed. When Daniel learns of this, he blanks to God. He prays to God for the wisdom. And then is able to tell the king what he wants to know. What else did Daniel do? I say else, but what did Daniel do when God gave him the interpretation? He prayed again to give thanks. Man, that's a lesson. How many times have you prayed for something and God came through and that he said, yes, I'll grant what you're asking and give you that, and then you just, well, that's marvelous, and go on your way. I've caught myself doing that and thought, you know, I never stopped to say thank you for what I asked you and you gave it to me, and I just went on, like, not even a tip or anything. I got tips on the mind because I called a place to order some food to pick up, and they said, you gonna leave a tip for the people who are going to bring it out to you. And I don't mean to be a stingy gut. And I don't need to be talking about that in Daniel class either. Okay, all right. If Judy agrees with me, it's legit. Number 4, complete the chart below describing the dream and its interpretation. 4 parts of the statue. There was the head made of gold that represented Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar and Babylon. And then there was, what was the next part of the statue? Chest and arms, they were made of silver. And they represented the next kingdom that would follow. Now, Daniel doesn't identify that kingdom, but we know from history that was the Medo-Persian Empire came following Nebuchadnezzar and Babylon. After the Persians was the Greek Empire, which was represented by belly and thighs made of brass. And following that were the legs that were made of iron and had feet of iron and clay. And they represented the next kingdom, which would have been Rome. The Bible tells of three kingdoms that God has had. In the Old Testament times, there was a blank kingdom. A physical kingdom, which gives you a clue to the next one. In the New Testament times, a blank kingdom. Spiritual. What's the next one? After the end of time, heavenly or eternal, which is somewhat of a misnomer because the present kingdom you and I are part of is eternal. Just because we live in time doesn't mean it's not an eternal kingdom. So there are those things. Anybody got anything you want to come back and talk about from chapter 2? Any alibis, any observations or comments? All right, let's go to chapter 3. Let's do a little reading. It's a little bit long, but I think it's worth reading. After all, this is a Bible class. I need somebody for 3 through 7. Who would like to read 3 through 7? All right, Janie. And then 8 through, I believe it was 12. 8 through 12. All right, Jake's going to read 8 through 12, 13 through 18. Brandy's got 13 through 18. Let's go 19 to 27. I'll read 19 to 27, and then who'll wrap it up 28 to 30? Last three verses. All right, here we go.
And said to Nebuchadnezzar the king, O king, live forever. You yourself, O king, have made a decree that every man who hears the sound of the horn, flute, lyre, trigon, psaltery, and bagpipe, and all kinds of music, is to fall down and worship the golden image. But whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into the midst of the furnace of blazing fire. There are certain Jews whom you have appointed over the administration of the province of Babylon, namely Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have disregarded you. They do not serve your gods or worship the golden image which you have set up.
Then Nebuchadnezzar, in rage and anger, gave orders to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Then these men were brought before the king. Nebuchadnezzar began speaking and said to them, Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods nor worship the golden statue that I have set up? Now, if you are ready, at the moment you hear the sound of the horn, flute, lyre, trigon, psaltery, and bagpipe, and all kinds of musical instruments, to fall down and worship the statue that I have made, very well. But if not worship, you will immediately be thrown into the midst of the furnace of blazing fire. And what God is there who can rescue you from my hands? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to the king, Nebuchadnezzar, we are not in need of an answer to give you concerning this matter. If it be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to rescue us from the furnace of blazing fire, and he will rescue us from your hand, O king. But even if he does not, let it be known to you, O king, that we are not going to serve your gods nor worship the golden statue that you have set up.
Then Nebuchadnezzar was filled with wrath, and his facial expression was altered toward Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He answered by giving orders to heat the furnace 7 times more than it was usually heated. And he commanded certain valiant warriors who were in his army to tie up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in order to cast them into the furnace of blazing fire. Then these men were tied up in their trousers, their coats, their caps, and their other clothes, and were cast into the midst of the furnace of blazing fire. For this reason, because the king's command was urgent, and the furnace had been made extremely hot, the flame of the fire slew those men who had carried up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But these 3 men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell into the midst of the furnace of blazing fire still tied up. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king was astounded and stood up in haste, he and his high officials. Was it not 3 men we cast bound in the midst of the fire? They replied to the king. And they replied to the king, certainly, O king. And he said, look, I see 4 men loosed and walking about in the midst of the fire without harm, and the appearance of the fourth is like a son of the gods. Then Nebuchadnezzar came near the door of the furnace of blazing fire. And he responded and said, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, come out, you servants of the Most High God, and come here. And then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out of the midst of the fire. The satraps, the prefects, the governors, and the king's high officials gathered around and saw in regard to these men that the fire had no effect on the bodies of these men, nor was the hair of their heads singed, nor were their trousers damaged, nor had the smell of fire even come upon them.
Nebuchadnezzar responded and said, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants who put their trust in him, violating the king's command, and yielded up their bodies so as not to serve or worship any god except their own god. Therefore, I make a decree that any people, nation, or tongue that speaks anything offensive against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be torn limb from limb, and their houses reduced to a rubbish heap, inasmuch as there is no other god who is able to deliver in this way. Then their king called Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to prosper in the province of Babylon.
Wow. Kind of like what Jeremiah said, when you get to Babylon, go to work, make a life for yourselves, and God is prospering their work in the king's court. There is the kingdom of Babylon in the yellow. And you can see in the red line, see if that works. Hey, there it is. See that green dot? There's the area of Jerusalem, and this is where, am I still amplified? This is where they were taken, straight up the coast, down the Euphrates River to Babylon. Why do you suppose they took that route? Everything was on the ground, and that was the easiest way to go. Those were the lowlands, the flatlands. If you wanted to travel, that's the best way to go. And so that's how these young men wound up in Babylon, along with many other Jewish young men and families. I don't know what the image looked like, but here are some obelisks. Some think the image was an obelisk. The one on the left is in Rome, and the one on the right is in Paris. Both of them are They're styled after the Egyptian obelisks. Here's a couple more. That one looks like it's made out of sandstone on the left. And the other one is probably just a different picture of one of the others. But this gives us some idea of what that kind of an image would look like. Describe the image as Daniel gives it to us. How did he describe it? How tall? 90 feet tall. 90 feet tall. How wide? It was in cubits, of course. But if you work it out, it would actually be 9 feet wide. 6 cubits, and a cubit was about 18 inches. So 6 cubits would be about 9.5 feet. By the way, the statue was as wide as Goliath is said to be tall. So Goliath was about 9.5 feet tall. Pretty good sized boy. He'd have a hard time finding clothes at Walmart. Well, I don't know. It's big and tall shop or something. We'll see. Here's another type of an image. It may have been like this. It might have had Nebuchadnezzar right there on the top. We don't know. Or an image of one of his gods. Because what did Nebuchadnezzar want these young men to do and everybody to do? Bow down and worship. So whatever this image was, it had something in connection with worship. So it might have been like that. I just put that in there because it occurred to me, man, if you're standing on top of one of those, that would be lonely up there. But those are just some possibilities of what it may have looked like. We have no idea, really, except that it was 90 feet tall, 9 feet wide, and what else is said in description of it? Covered with gold. Can you imagine how that thing would have looked when the sun hit it in the morning? Would have been something else. Would have been splendiferous. I don't know if that's a word, but I'm saying that. I just put that map back up there. All right, let's do the worksheet. The story of Daniel 3 takes place about, what year would you put there? When was Daniel carried into captivity? 606 B.C., 606 years before Jesus was born, as we count time. One of the dates also given is 587. Why would 587 be a date given? How many deportations were there of Jews to Babylon? There were three. 606 was the first one. That's when Daniel and his buddies went. And then there were two others, and one of those was in 587. Four Jewish men hold high positions in the court of Nebuchadnezzar because blank had interpreted the king's blank. Daniel had interpreted the king's dream. And because they had all made a good impression on the king's blank. And that one's kind of worded funny. But how did the king come to know them? Remember, he had a school set up, more or less, and they were in that school for how long? You remember? 3 years. They went to school for 3 years to learn the literature, the language, everything about Babylon they could learn. Had their names changed, of course. And then at the end of 3 years, the king comes and he converses with these young men, and he finds these three to be superior to all the, or these four to be superior to all the rest. So the word you could put in there is test or examination. Test fits better. It made a good impression on the king's test. That just sounds funny. These men have been in Babylon for about, well, yes, 3 years by the time of the test. But by the time of them being on the plain of Dura, it's estimated that they were there for about 18 years. So 3 years for the schooling, but by this time, it's supposed that it was about 18 years. Nebuchadnezzar reigned over territory from the east of the Blank River. That's the Euphrates River. All the way to Ethiopia on the west. Where's Ethiopia on the map? Where would you find it? What's the easiest way to describe where Ethiopia is? South of Egypt. Go to Egypt and take a left. If you're where they are in Babylon. A couple of things about King Nebuchadnezzar and what he had done historically. He had also built the Ishtar gates. Ishtar, I-S-H-T-A-R, gates. And the goddess Ishtar, by the way, is, I believe, where we get the name for our holiday of Easter. Anybody know that? Yeah, so when somebody says, oh, you're worshiping Ishtar, I say, what are you talking about? I would never accuse anybody of worshiping God if they didn't know what they were doing, so I don't think we really worship Ishtar. The Ishtar gates and the processional way, and how many of you have heard of the Hanging Gardens? One of the ancient wonders. He is also responsible for the Hanging Gardens. He built those in Babylon. Just a few historical points of interest. Number two, in Daniel chapter blank, chapter 3, we read that Nebuchadnezzar built an image that was blank feet high and blank feet wide. Or you can give it in cubits. How many cubits? 60 cubits or about 90 feet? 6 cubits or 9 feet. Probably in the form of an obelisk. O-B-E-L-I-S-K. Those were pretty popular in ancient times. Still are. What's the most famous obelisk in the United States, I imagine? Oh, okay. You got it. I thought you would. When all of you said that, I don't know, something surprised me. The monument was covered with blank gold. That's a lot of gold. It was built in the plain of Dura, D-U-R-A. At the dedication ceremony, this is number three, all government officials from the blank were invited. Everybody from the province, the entire province. When the music was played, all were to fall down and blank before the image. Worship. When the music was played, back it up here. This suggests that the image was built in honor of the blanks of Babylon. In honor to the gods of Babylon. If anyone refuses to worship in this way, he'll be thrown into the fiery furnace. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were present, but blank to bow down. Refused. Declined. What was that Captain Barbosa said? Disinclined to acquiesce. Yes. Yeah, that was a great line. Means no. What's that?
I said, not going to do it.
Not going to do it, yeah. That was Dana Carvey. Where are we here? Number five, the king was told about this and was blank. Furious, he ordered them to be brought before him and offered them a blank chance. A second chance, last chance. I like that even better. Second is the answer provided, but I think last chance fits. But said that if they refused, they would be thrown into the fiery furnace. He said, what blank will be able to rescue you from my hand? What God? That's a dangerous question. Similar to the one Pharaoh asked. When Moses showed up in Pharaoh's court, Pharaoh asked, who is God that I should obey him? And God said, well, let me show you. The Jews still said they would not blank blank bow down. And if they were thrown into the furnace, they believed their blank. God could rescue them if he chose to do so. The king ordered the furnace to be heated blank times hotter, seven times hotter than the three Jews should be thrown into it. The furnace was probably a, and this wasn't provided in the text, probably a kiln, don't know, for making bricks. Why else would you have a furnace such as that?
What happened to the Maccabee?
I don't know. The hammers?
For the Maccabee revolt, you know, they were thrown in the pan, burned and all that other stuff. Is that similar, or would it be? Oven I'm referring to?
I don't know. That'll be your research project for next week. Come back and make a report. I want 3 pages, double-spaced. Anybody else know the answer to John's question? If you're not familiar with the Maccabean Revolt, that's interesting reading too. Josephus talks about that at some length. If you don't know who Josephus is, look Josephus up. And then go read what Josephus said about the destruction of Jerusalem. But don't plan to eat soon afterwards. It is horrific. Just what Jesus said. It's interesting that Jesus said that in Matthew 24. There's going to be a time of tribulation such as has never been and will never be again. And it was all focused on the destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70. And then he provided a historian, a Jewish historian, to write down the details. And he did write down the details. And it's bad. Somewhere in our files, if you go back, you'll find I did a couple lessons on that. They were very interesting, but they weren't fun. Put it that way. All right. Where are we here? Number 8. As the king looks into the furnace, he sees 3 men blank around, walking around with a blank man, a 4th man who looks like a son of the gods. Then king shouts for them to come out. How many does he say to come out? He says, you 3 guys come out. Why didn't he say for the 4th guy to come out? It doesn't say, but I'm thinking, okay, I don't know if I have authority to have him come out. I told those guys to go in. I got to have them come out. Interesting. Just one more verse. Number 9, when the men come out, they're not harmed. In fact, they do not even have the blank of fire or burning. Smell of fire. Can't you smell that right now? You smell the campfire? That's a good smell. Can you smell burnt hair? Oh, man, that's nasty stuff. And that's one of the things they say. Not even their hair is singed. We're studying Luke, remember, on Wednesday nights. And Jesus has mastery over the seas. He says to the sea, be still, and the winds calm down, and they do it. He says to the demons, come out, and they come out. He divides bread and fish. There is nothing over which God does not have mastery, and we're seeing that here as well. It's always been that way. So when you pray, pray with faith. The king says, this is still in number 9, praise be to the blank, the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his blank angel and rescued his servants. That's what he believed that 4th person to be. The king sent a decree saying that no one should say anything against the blank of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And he promoted them to blank positions. Higher positions in his government. He didn't just say, by the way, if you caught it in the text, you're not allowed to say anything against these gods. What else did he say would happen? You'll be torn limb from limb. God. It was a pretty stringent time. Could you imagine that kind of an execution going on today? in America. What's that?
There'd be a lot less crime.
Be a lot less crime.
I imagine so. At least the one torn limb from limb won't do anything else wrong. Remember that? What was that commercial? I think it was back in the 60s, maybe the 70s, where the cowboys caught somebody and said, string him up. It'll teach him a lesson. It's like, what's the point of that lesson? That's not going anywhere. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It impresses people. Just like Solomon said, when sentence against an evil deed is not executed speedily, the hearts of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil. And you can see that in any first grade class when the teacher steps out. Things start to get rowdy. And there is no first grader who stands up to say, now listen, fellas, you know, we ought to behave while the teacher's gone. And everybody else say, you know, you're right. We weren't thinking. Let's all calm down. Things always escalate. Sin always escalates.
When God's Spirit lives in us, He encourages us and helps us keep from getting rowdy.
Right.
And if you're not a Christian, then you have possibly the opposite going on. And the peace that you get as a Christian is not present. And so, you know, it's just a lesson in life for us.
And sometimes we wonder perhaps if it's the Spirit or if it's our own conscience or if it is both. Spirit of God working with our conscience to remind us. Just like my mom used to say, you knew better. And all the time I was doing it, I knew better. But it was fun until you got called on the carpet for it. Well, what's that?
So we're getting out of the truck, and I tell my mom and Dina, Happy Mother's Day. And I looked at Mom, I said, thanks for not killing me when I need it. And I told Dina, I said, thanks for marrying me. And in the back seat, you could hear my mom say, we still got time.
That's a good one. It's hard to get one up on your mom, isn't it? She's been way ahead of us. Number 11, what is a quality of Nebuchadnezzar we should seek to have? Isn't that an interesting question? What is a quality of Nebuchadnezzar we should seek to have? What did he do when he saw four people in there? Johnny?
I think he was smarter than Pharaoh.
Smarter than Pharaoh. I agree. Good observation.
He recognized a power greater than him.
Pharaoh failed to do that, but not Nebuchadnezzar. There's a certain air of repentance going on there, a change of mind. Ah, I see with my eyes, and now I will believe what I'm seeing and make concessions to that end. That's called the scientific method. When you make an observation that tells you something, you change the way you think about it. Anything else? Any other quality of Nebuchadnezzar's?
Did you say humility?
Humility has to be there for that, yes. I think that was Pharaoh's downfall, just as Johnny brought up. Pharaoh was too proud to say, yeah, I'll give in to an 80-year-old shepherd who can do the kinds of things that he does. There must be some power behind him. Interestingly enough, in John chapter 3, that's an observation that Nicodemus made when he came to Jesus. And he said, we know. He didn't say, I know. He said, we know that you are from God because no one could do the things that you do unless God is with him. He was a Pharisee, yet he was willing to see the truth. And he came to Jesus to talk to him about these things, to learn more of who he was. And apparently there were others. And there were others. He was not the only one. So keep telling people about Jesus. Keep talking about souls and eternity. Keep mentioning spiritual things to people. You never know when you're going to find someone whom God has prepared to talk to you and wants to talk to somebody about just those things. Number 12, name two situations in which we should be willing to show the courage of these three Jews. Can you think of one? When do you need courage today? This kind of courage. How about you've got friends and they're going to do something maybe not horrible, but you know it's not moral, it's not constructive, and they invite you to go along. What's the first thing you should probably do? Turn them down. Should you do anything else besides turning them down? Oh, I'm hearing stuff. I bet it's really good. Well, I'm hearing noise that represents stuff that I think is really good. What's that?
Tell them why.
Tell them why. Excellent, yes. Why? I don't want to go with you. I don't want to go. Name something people do that they might invite you to go along.
IRS. Have a drink.
Have a drink. Let's go have a drink. What would you say? Well, that's great. The Bible doesn't condemn drinking. It condemns drunkenness. So you all go on ahead. Is that a good thing to say? Now, technically, it might be accurate. You know anybody that became an alcoholic because they did a little social drinking? Or lost the image of Christ in the eyes of some because they did that? And we're not responsible for just exactly how everybody sees us, but we are responsible for our behavior and however that behavior might reflect. That's just one thing. What else might you say? Offer an option. Great idea. How about instead we do this? Charles?
You want a drink? Let's go to Sonic.
All right. Yeah. I used to ask my friends, you want me to drink with you? Why do we have to drink that stuff? Why is it a challenge? If you offered me a root beer and I turned you down, you would say, why don't you want to drink root beer? Don't you want to drink with me? Nobody would say that. Well, your root beer is probably a bad example because it's got beer in it, in the name, but you know what I'm saying. Yeah, but there's something about alcohol that has the idea of fellowship with it for some reason. Paul?
For them, a meal with a glass of wine at home. I mean, the Jews considered wine food, and so it's a question of how you're using it, and also not everybody's a candidate for moderation, but some may be. So I think we have to be careful. The Bible tells us, speak where it speaks, but remain silent where it is silent, to not go too far and throw out a blanket easement over something entirely.
Right.
Because situations can dictate. I mean, the Lord's first public miracle was turning water into wine.
Right.
So I think we need to be a little careful with that, because some people like to just say categorically across the board. It's not the same thing.
And Romans 14, I think, covers that. Romans 14 talks about personal opinions and practices that are not across the line one way or the other. Just, for example, I have known people that thought I was in error because I celebrated Christmas with a tree and presents and talked about Santa Claus. And so, okay, somebody else says, you do that trick-or-treat stuff, you're worshiping the devil. Okay, I grew up with Halloween. No, I know better than that. It's personal opinion. But if they want to believe that, I'm not going to say, well, if you're in error because you condemn Halloween or you condemn Christmas. There's a certain amount of freedom we have in Christ. Are you grateful for that? I'm grateful for that as a leader. I don't have to go up and down the street knocking on the doors of members of the church saying, hey, listen, I heard that you mow your lawn this way instead of that way. So you're out of the church.
Offensive, but being
Right. Right. Towards Mecca. Yeah. Or in our culture, somebody says, well, I'm not a male or a female, I'm non-binary. Okay. Regardless of what I think about that, what are they still? They're a human being. They're created in the image of God. Whatever confusion they have, whatever belief they have that I think is wrong, I don't need to bow down to their idea that I believe is wrong, but I also don't need to be hateful and ugly and offensive. You treat people with respect. You don't have to believe what they believe, but you can still treat people with respect. And you can respectfully decline in a lot of areas of life where people who are wrong would have you go along with them. Jamie?
We have always told our son, you may not agree with the person, you may not want to be involved in what they're doing. For example, you're invited to a wedding that you cannot attend because you disagree. That doesn't mean you can't treat them like a person. You sit down with them at work and have lunch because you guys are colleagues, you're in a meeting together, you're hospitable, they've got a flat tire, you help them change their tire.
Right.
You don't necessarily socially interact with the person, but you still treat them as a person. And that's a philosophy we've had for our entire marriage. And that's what we're trying to instill in our child as well.
And it's good to be talking about these things now, because you need to talk about what you might do in a certain circumstance before you find yourself in that circumstance. What will I do in this situation if I encounter this or if I encounter that? How will I behave? How will I respond? What am I going to do if... Well, anybody know who Henry Cho is? He's a comedian, and he's full-blood Korean, but he was raised in Knoxville, Tennessee. I think it was Knoxville, Tennessee. So he sounds just like somebody from Knoxville, Tennessee. And he was telling his story. He said they've got a cabin. Well, what do you put between the logs of a cabin? You see it coming, don't you? He said, I'm going to have some fun. We need some of that. By the way, that stuff is called chink. So he goes down to Home Depot, and he walks up behind the guy that's working there, and he says, hey, y'all got any chink? And the guy turns around and says, no, I don't think we have any more chink. And he says, can you ask somebody? See if somebody else might know if you got some. So it's that kind of a thing. Oh, yo, that's a word. I don't know if I should use that word. And it's better not to be caught off guard, and the only way not to be caught off guard is to prepare yourself ahead of time. What did Peter say? He said, be ready to give an answer. Well, that's Paul writing to Timothy. Be ready in season and out of season. Marshall Keeble said when they likes it and when they don't. That's what that means. But Paul said, be ready to give an answer to those who ask you of the hope that's in you, yet with gentleness and reverence. That's the way we should be ready to answer people. We want to share the truth, but, I don't really, there's nothing wrong with the word share, but there's something about it I don't like. Tell the truth, speak the truth, offer the truth, believe the truth, articulate the truth, get truth to people, love people. That's the thing. Look past anything you need to look past. If for you it's the color of their skin and you're raised in an environment where you you're preoccupied with that, learn to look past that. If it's piercings, look past it. If it's tattoos, look past it. If it's the color of their hair, look past that. Look past whatever you need to look past to love someone, because everybody has something you need to look past, and we are all made in the image of God, and we need to get back to that. And Jesus came not to be served, but to serve, and this is how we serve him, by loving people enough to stand for the truth like these young men did. Nope, we're not going to bow down, and you're an idiot for asking us this. No, they didn't. They weren't like that. Remember Daniel, first chapter, when they said, we want you to eat this food? He asked permission. May we eat something different? He didn't demand. He didn't self-righteously, well, I'm a child of God, and our God is superior to your God. He gives us a better way to live, and we're not going to do the stupid things that you... No, he wasn't like that. He asked permission. And when he didn't get permission, he persisted. He said, well, let me go to the next guy down here and ask him. And then he made a deal with him. He gave an option. How about for 10 days? You try us for 10 days on vegetables and water, and we'll see what happens after that. Making a suggestion, an alternative. And that's what happened. We're seeing godliness lived out in the lives of these young men on the pages of these chapters as we read them. So anyway, bell's rung, we got to quit. Why do we always start getting to the good stuff when it's time to quit? I don't know. Maybe we'll flip-flop our class next week. We'll start with the good stuff. And anyway, Lord love you.